Hello and welcome everyone to the second edition of the Pondwater Dave Show. My name is Justin Davis and I am the host of this fantastic show. I am joined by my two colleagues each and every week. You know her as, I was corrected on this last week, Amy, because I called you the president of the Arn Anderson Fan Club, and I was rudely corrected by Andrew Hermes, who said you were the first lady of the Arn Anderson Fan Club. So I got it right this week. I'm proud of that. And how are you doing, Miss Amy?
I am doing wonderful. So excited to be here with you all today. And yes, I am the first lady. I am also signed up for his Kickstarter thing that he's got going on for his, Arn Anderson has for his graphic novel. And I definitely would encourage. Yes, I would definitely. It's only been like 24 hours and he's almost hit his goal. So definitely looking forward to that.
If you've got it in front of you, give everybody the link. I mean, give everybody the address. Or we can circle back to it. I don't mean to put you on the spot.
No, I know it's Kickstarter.com. It's Arn Anderson. I'll find it.
Yeah, just, and it's not like that. You can't see where it says Amy, First Lady of Arn Anderson's Fan Club on the screen.
Well, Miss Amy is looking that up. Pondwater, how are you this week? Anything going on over there in Gooseland, Mississippi, wherever you live?
Oh, just living the dream, getting ready for the holidays next week. Out there slinging hot Cheetos to the masses and outlying outposts.
Yeah, as this drops at 6:05 Friday morning this week, it'll be just a few days leading up to Thanksgiving. We hope everyone has a great Thanksgiving holiday, as you won't hear us until the day after Thanksgiving, I guess, next week. So
I've got a lot to be thankful for this year.
Absolutely. And speaking of that, Dave, how did the first episode of the After Chats?
After Mag Chats.
I knew I'd screw it up too.
Yeah, I thought the first episode went really well. It's very fascinating. I hope everybody that's on, that's a member of Ad Free Shows will take time out next Monday to give it a listen. But I highly encourage anybody that's on Ad Free Shows to find the link to the full 40-minute interview and give it a listen, because Bruno Sammartino had a very, very fascinating life. He's very proud of his heritage. I mean, it talks about him as a young boy during World War II, where they were run out of their village up into the mountains. I mean, the death of young siblings.
Didn't he have something?
It took him 3 years to get in the country because he had to take a physical before he could come to America. His father was already here.
Right. But I was thinking that he had, you know, smallpox, or he had something when he was in the mountain. I thought he was sick.
Well, he said because they didn't clean, when they left, the dead were still laying in the streets. So there was lots of illness. But it took him 3 years to pass a physical so he could come to the United States. He's real proud of his background, and I learned a lot because Bruno was after, I mean, he'd already become an announcer when my fandom started. So I only knew Bruno from what I'd seen in the magazines. But there's a fun story about him and Harley Race wrestling in St. Louis. Just, I'm excited. I hope everybody will take a minute, because it's really generous of Bill Apter to share these, you know, when you listen to it. Bill Apter hosted the first podcast. When you think about it, it sounds just like a podcast. He used to record these and he would do like a 15-minute segment on a local radio station. And he was taping it just on a tape recorder. And that's why they call it the After Mag Chats. He even holds it up and shows you. Because there's a lot of people that are members of Ad Free Shows that are so young, they probably don't know what tape recorder is.
Or who Bill Apter is. And many, we always hear about the Apter Mags. He was also a major wrestling photographer, right, Dave?
Oh, yes. He photographed. Well, he was there the night that Bruno beat Buddy Rogers for the title. You know, he took that picture. He was there the night. I take that back. He wasn't there the night that Bruno won the title. He was there the night that Bruno lost the title to Ivan Koloff. And I mean, it's just fun, fun stories, y'all.
So if you guys, you know, definitely take a chance. I think this show will educate you. I know it'll educate me as someone that, you know, was born in 85 and didn't, like you said, see Bruno's career and things like that. So this would be good. And what day is that coming out for everyone to listen to on Ad Free Shows Day?
Next Monday. So okay, as so, we speak, today is the 16th, so the 21st.
Yep. So you guys will be listening to this on Friday, so that as soon as the weekend's over, you'll get to check out the After Mag Chats with Pondwater Dave and Bill After. I'm definitely looking forward to that.
It'll be bi-weekly, every other Monday.
Okay. Every other Monday. So you're kind of be on that mailbag with Mike Chioda schedule then.
Yes.
Okay. So you'll be opposite of him each week. You guys will just flip.
Correct.
Gotcha. All right. Well, that's fun. Yeah. Amy has an interesting story for us that she wants to open up with. What do you got, Amy?
Yeah, I was just going to say I thought it was a funny story. But anyway, my sister was going out of town and her daughter is a senior in high school. And there was going to be like it's called Racer Day. It was going to be kind of like an open house for Murray State University, which is the college that she is thinking about attending. And that it happens to be the school that I attended. So my sister asked if I mind taking her. I said, no, you know, that'd be great. So my sister didn't have a whole lot of details. So I got on Google and, you know, looked up Murray State to see if I could find any information about this Racer Day. And it had a little column and it had notable alumni. And I thought, I don't know. I'd never seen that before. So I was like, I was just curious. And so I clicked on it. And of course, Ja Morant of the Memphis Grizzlies is a, you know, a alumni of Murray State. And they had all these, some other people. And I came across a professional wrestler who is an alumni of Murray State.
Can I have a guess? Is it Billy Jack Haynes?
My 6 degrees of separation from Billy Jack. Surprisingly, no, it was not Billy
Jack. We all know his ass didn't go to college.
Oh, my. Oh, I got, yeah. It was Leva Bates, who is famous as being NXT Blue Pants. And she is also in AEW as the librarian. She's with Peter Avalon, right?
Yeah.
And so I tweeted her that. I'm like, hey, first off, I didn't know she went to Murray State. I thought that was exciting. And I tweeted her and just said, hey, she did not know she was listed as a notable alumni. So I'm like,
she didn't know she was notable.
No, she's like, that's really cool. And I said, yeah, here's your picture right here. And I'm like, I'm dying to ask her 1,000 questions about what she did here. Where does she go? Does she live on campus? Blah, blah, blah. But that is just my little funny interaction with wrestling this week.
That's awesome. That, you know, that's definitely cool that she messaged back and you got to interact with her a little bit. So that's always a fun time. I know your daughter doesn't she go to Murray State as well?
Olivia does. She is
another notable
senior.
Soon to be alumni.
Baby doll.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, what is happening in the wrestling world this week? We try to kind of touch on each week on the show, kind of touch on what's the news and happenings of the world of professional wrestling. And something happened over in the NWA this week that seemed to light a lot of people's butts on fire. Tyrus wins the NWA title from Trevor Murdoch, I believe.
It was a three-way.
It was a three-way. That's right.
But Trevor Murdoch was the defending champion.
Yes. And a lot of people had not very popular opinions on this. Dave, what's your feelings on Tyrus being the new NWA World Champion?
Why not? I mean, we talked about Logan Paul and how great it would have been had he beat Roman because of all his followers. Tyrus is, for y'all that don't know, Tyrus is the artist formerly known as Brodus Clay. the Funkadactyl.
Funkasaurus.
Yeah.
Funkasaurus. He had the Funkadactyls. I was a big fan of the Funkadactyls, okay?
Okay.
Somebody called my mama. Anyway.
That was your nickname back in high school, wasn't it? The Funkadactyl.
So Tyrus wins it, and if you can be upset, if you can give it, I would love to hear somebody's reasons why they don't like Tyrus. Why is this bad? Because he's a legitimate monster. He looks the part.
I think, but one reason why it was bad is because the wrestling itself didn't look very good to me when I saw some clips out of it. He looked like he was struggling a little bit in there.
Yeah, and it's looked that way to me too. I mean, he's a big man, he's lumbering. That's a problem, and that's a problem with that product in itself.
NWA or what? What do you mean?
The NWA product is. I mean, in our next story, it'll touch on that. I mean, I used to pay their $4.99 a month to watch their products, and I canceled the subscription
for the Power NWA.
It was just an hour of my time that they couldn't get, which says a lot because I think so highly of so many people on that program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was not something I was compelled to watch every week, so I just quit paying for it. But Tyrus, if those are your reasons that he's not very good, that you don't think he's very good, you know, then that's good. We'll do that. But if, you know, because he appears on Fox News,
I was going to bring that up. I think that's one reason that they did it too, hoping that more eyes would get on the product because he is on national.
And he's extremely popular on there.
Yeah.
He's extremely popular on there.
He was on the show with the belt.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the Fox News show, he has the belt with him.
And that's only good for NWA, obviously.
And I think the first time I saw him on a Fox News show, I was probably getting a haircut or something that it was on the TV. I don't watch the news, y'all.
I don't either.
The news depresses me. There's nothing good ever on the news.
No, I read my news. I don't watch it. I just read it and move on.
I mean, it's not something I enjoy watching. I like to be, you know, I'm happy fun time 24/7. I don't want to be brought down I say that because I didn't realize, like, why is Tyrus of all people? Because if y'all are shocked he's NWA champ, I'm shocked he's a Fox correspondent. I mean, he just don't fit the typical image of a Fox correspondent. So anyway, I think I would have rather seen it go on Matt Cardona, but I think Billy thinks that he's better served with it on Tyrus.
I do too. Matt Cardona's not going to be on Fox News.
But I mean, yeah, Matt Cardona's going to expose the NWA because he's always working.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly popular podcasts with the major figures. Mm-hmm. He's on everybody's show. He's always working. Today, I read that maybe WWE's giving him a look. He's on their radar again.
Hmm.
Maybe going back as Matt Cardona and not Zack Ryder. Maybe that's why he made that decision to give it to Tyrus. I think that Tyrus is a total exposure move. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that crowd, they may watch it though, because I mean, there's plenty of closet wrestling fans that, you know, you'll be around and you'll mention wrestling and you'll be surprised at who will get into the conversation because they would have never let you know that they were fans. I mean, some people think they're above it.
Well, you can't call me. Go ahead, Amy.
No, I was just going to say, I think going on what you're saying, Pondwater, especially the NWA label, that is an old school wrestling word and territory, I guess you could say. So, you know, maybe someone sees Tyrus on Fox News or wherever else he might be out and recognize NWA as something that either they watched as a child or at least heard of and be somewhat intrigued to see what's going on. Why is you know, I recognize him and I recognize NWA. Let me maybe look into that.
And that's right. the belt that people my age associate with the NWA.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of the belt, that belt that he's got is incredibly nice. It's larger. It's larger than the traditional version of it. And that's been something, you know, when he became TV champion, he upgraded their TV belt. He has a better version of the TV belt. And it was an upgrade to what they were using on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's upgraded their version of their championship belt, which was already pretty nice. You know, they were using the one that was made by a company called Fandu. And they were selling really nice replicas of it. I'd say that it's one of the nicest versions, especially being a mass-produced belt that, of the NWA that they've ever had. But he got Ron Edwardson of Red Leathers that does the AEW belts to do them the classic Dome Globe. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, so he takes pride. He takes pride in just, you know, the belt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he takes pride in the presentation. So,
do you think he does that because of his size being bigger? Like, it would look really weird if he had a really small belt, right? Like, does he upgrade them or make them? Because he, like you said, he upgraded the TV belt
because the TV belt they were using was crap.
Oh, okay.
It was absolute crap.
Well, I mean, and if he's going to be carrying around on Fox News, you want it to look good.
I mean,
exactly.
For some reason, if I was working for the NWA, I'd have grabbed mine off the shelf and said, "Hey guys, let's use mine while I'm here, okay?"
Well, before we move on to the next topic, Dave, I just want to say I am not a closet wrestling fan because I came out of it a long, long time ago. our next topic is Nick Aldis. Aldis was on Sam Roberts' pod and had some things to say about what the final straw was for him and leaving the NWA, as we talked about last week on our first episode. Back in the archives, as they like to say. But Dave, what's your feelings on what Nick had to say here?
I thought he was spot on with his issue. I mean, we're not going to sugarcoat it. Him and Billy are in a pissing match.
Mm-hmm.
Nick was doing the majority of creative, and then Billy showed up and wanted to do it. And I mean, I'm not going to say that this is 100% a Billy Corgan issue and that Nick Aldis isn't hard to work with. I don't know. I mean, if you're going to believe that Billy's that way, then you got to believe that maybe Nick's a little difficult too. But Nick said that he was fine, but then he started getting asked to do things that he wasn't comfortable with because it wasn't his job. Billy was having an issue with Thunder Rosa. He wanted Nick to call her.
Hmm.
And he said, well, so he calls her and he says, "Hey, don't be mad at me. I don't have anything to do with this, but Billy wanted me to call you, you know, but it's not my job. So I've made the call." Then he said he would ask him things. "Well, you've put me in a bad position because if I tell you what was working, then it looks like I'm trying to put myself over into the angle."
Right.
And then I think. He did this in front of somebody, so there was at least a witness, somebody named Pat, I believe is what he said. But the thing was, is that when it started blowing back up on him, and I think he just made an offhanded comment to Mickey James that your husband's pressuring me to put the belt back on him. And I think that's where it rubbed him wrong, because he knew that if he tried to help with the booking, that's not what he wanted to fall back on him. But he also said that one of the key things was that they had built the NWA from where it was to where they were at. And I'm going to tell you, they did improve the product. And Harley Race wanted nothing to do with the NWA. And they got Harley Race on board with not having an issue with them anymore, and actually sat down and did an interview with Aldis on one of their programs. And Harley was on board. So Nick's like, all of a sudden now we're doing things that, how can I look Harley in the eye and explain that we did this?
Mm-hmm.
And he used the example of the social distancing match. And if y'all aren't familiar with the Tokyo five-star classic that is the social distancing match, that's heavy sarcasm, y'all.
That sounds.
And this
like
has nothing to do with the talent involved.
That sounds like Taryn, every Orange Cassidy match.
Taryn Terrell. Yeah, Taryn Terrell versus it could have been Smiley Kylie Rae. I don't remember who the opponent was, but they both had to wear masks and gloves, and they couldn't touch. So if Taryn Terrell went to go throw out like a lockup, the other girl had to act like she's being locked up. So when Taryn Terrell did the arm drag, the opponent had to take the arm drag.
Yeah, that sounds dumb.
Yeah.
That sounds dumb. And
dumb is nice.
That sounds like
it. As a matter of fact, Amy, when you go to church Sunday, I want you to light a candle for that creative.
Oh gosh. Do y'all know that they have to have a whole row of candles? I'm like, nope, that's mine. I need every one of those.
I guess we should. I do want to credit the source of this interview in case you want to go back. I know we said Sam Roberts, but it is called Not Sam, correct?
Dave? Yes.
The name of the podcast. So if you want to check out that Nick Aldis interview, head on over to Not Sam on any of your podcasting networks.
So he went.
Let me just ask something just real quick. So was Nick Aldis, did he have, he had backstage roles? But he was being asked to do more because you said he was helping book. Is that what you said?
Yeah. He was helping. I mean, he did the 10 pounds of gold series on his own.
Okay.
I mean, but he liked it. He didn't have any problem with it. And right. He said that the NWA came to him this year and offered him for another year, and he signed for another year. And they said, we'll give you 90 days notice if we don't want to renew your contract. We'll give you 90 days notice and pay you. Mm-hmm. And if you want to leave, you have to give us 60 days notice. So he said they were very fair with it. It was the fairest contract that he ever got. And he didn't even ask for all that. It's just that he decided he couldn't defend the creative. Now, I will hold him to task, taking that stand that creative that you can't explain to Harley Race. What would Harley Race think? Okay. For the rest, now, wherever he ends up, he's got to keep that in mind if they ask him to do some silly stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. Now you got to hold yourself to that Harley Race standard going forward. But I'm proud to hear him say it. I'm a Nick Aldis fan. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud to hear him say that and take that stance on the creative. He didn't have an issue with talent. He right. never not one criticism towards talent. It's the creative. And it resonated with me because that's why I quit watching it. Was that, I mean, it was things like the camera angles that they're doing like a studio wrestling, mm-hmm. which is difficult because you're not having squash matches. It's they tried the old formula they had, like the old 605 TBS show was working.
Mm-hmm.
And they've kind of gotten away from that, but it's still in that setting. But you can't get the camera in so close that you're exposing the action. And it's the way that it was shot. And when I want to see them do well. And I'm not saying anything at all negative about their talent because they have incredible talent. And not everything on there is bad. Look at Kerry Morton.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the junior heavyweight division has been, what I've seen of it has been pretty incredible. Homicide's an incredible talent. Those guys are doing good. I mean, I'd take a bullet for Tim Storm. Trevor Murdoch is, I didn't have a problem with Trevor Murdoch. Matt Cardona, Thomas Lattimore looks the part of a wrestler. Mm-hmm. And Camille, and you can't blame Camille because when Camille has a decent opponent, she looks like, I mean, you're only as good as what you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, she's come so far. And she's
what I was going to say is I really do feel though that losing Nick Aldis is a loss for NWA because I do think he kind of personified NWA product. Like when I think of the current NWA product, I really do think of Nick Aldis, you know, even though he wasn't champion. I mean,
Yes.
Seeing him in his suits, seeing him, you know, present himself as a star, as a champion. I think of that, you know, and so, you know, I really do hate that it's kind of, and again, not taking, you know, anybody else's talent that's on the roster, but I just feel like when I thought about NWA, I really do think about Nick Aldis in a three-piece suit with a vest, with a belt, you know, giving an interview, doing, you know, doing what he does best. And I think that is eventually, I feel like that is going to be a loss for them, you know.
Billy Corgan talks about tradition. And I'll be the first to admit, they say, you'll hear people say all the time, the NWA doesn't mean what it used to. The NWA is a dead brand. Those three letters still mean something to me. Until this year, the proudest moment I've had as a referee was standing in the ring holding the 10 pounds of gold over my head, getting to referee Jack Stane versus Houston Carson for the NWA world title. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hold them to a different standard. I mean, if you're going to use that brand, you have to strive to make that brand what it once was. I mean, when you use that lineage of Harley Race and the Funks and Buddy Rogers and Lou Thesz and Dusty Rhodes and Jeff Jarrett and Sting, and, you know, when you're using that lineage, you have to. Don't do things that make you, that one of these things don't look like the other, you know? So I'm pulling for them. I'm not dogging them. There's two sides to every story. I'm not saying that Nick Aldis is the good guy. I'm not saying Billy Corgan's the bad guy. But when I hear Billy Corgan on Busted Open with his side of the story, and I hear Nick Aldis spitting facts with his side of the story, I got to think that Aldis is on to something. And it was just a decision that he's going to go do something else because he can't stomach what they're doing.
Well, I did want to bring up one more topic of the week. Speaking of spitting, you know, the man that spit all the intros and Road Dogg. Listen, Road Dogg, I love you, buddy. But if we could just go one freaking show without crapping on Bret Hart at this point, it would be helpful for me. And I get his point. You know, if you guys missed it, I was just listening to Road Dogg, his episode on the Montreal Screwjob. On ad-free shows. And I get it, he's a Sean guy, and I would completely expect him to fall into the Sean camp. But I don't know. Just first of all, I think anyone that thinks that that's a work is really out to left field. Because just too many things had to happen for that to be a work, and too many people had to not ever talk about it being a work. And there's just no way in heck for me that that's a work. Also, he brought up the point that, you know, Bret should have obviously did business. And I don't disagree with that point. But I think one point that he kept leaving out was what Sean told Bret, which is, you know, I appreciate you telling me that, but I will never return the favor for you. To me, that's a shot at your manhood more than anything else. And I think that when you leave that part out of it, yeah, it sounds like Bret, you know, was being selfish and he should have done business. But when you challenge a guy's manhood in the way that Sean did there, I think it brings a new aspect into it. Also, Bret's contract wasn't up until, what, December 8th, something like that. There was plenty of time after Survivor Series to figure out how to get the belt off of him. It's not like
he was. Bischoff said that. Well, I don't know if they could believe Bischoff, but Bischoff said him staying on television in WWE to finish up was not an issue for him. Right. He wasn't chomping at the bit to get him on TV.
Yeah, they didn't even put him on TV until weeks later, right. after Montreal. So, okay, I got that off my chest. We can move on. All right. So we want to – what we're going to do right now – what I'd like to have right now is for all you know, we are going to do a little full year. We got a big pay-per-view coming up this weekend for AEW.
I thought he was going into a Rick Rude promo.
I was getting ready.
He's getting ready to call you a sweat hog.
I was going to tell you, yeah. You guys aren't fat, so I couldn't really go with the whole thing. But anyways, we've got full gear coming up, and we're going to take a look at the card here and kind of put some predictions together, get you guys ready for full gear this weekend. And Dave, what you got for us over there?
Are we going to take them one match at a time, or you want me to?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's go ahead. And the first match, you want me to start at the bottom or the top?
Let's start at the bottom. Let's start our way to the main event.
Yeah. So first match we got here is Darby Allin and Sting versus Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett, which to me, I think that's going to, you know, be a show stealer. Obviously, Jeff's first match back in AEW, back against Sting. Lord knows they've had some history together. And anytime an old person is wrestling, Jay Lethal seems to be involved some which way. So what are you guys thinking about that?
Ladies first. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say, I predict Darby and Sting winning. I mainly picked that because, as I said on our first episode, I really want Jeff Jarrett main role to be in the back. And so I feel like if Jeff and Lethal win, which I really would like Jay Lethal to win a match, but again, I just don't think that it makes sense to have Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett beat Sting and Darby. So I want them to win so that Jeff can go in the back and concentrate on where he's desperately needed.
What do you think, Dave?
I think that Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal are either going to win or get disqualified. I don't see Darby Allin coming out of this match in one piece. Because I think we're leading to Jeff Jarrett versus Sting one-on-one.
I think
that's the purpose of this match. He didn't call Sting out for a tag team match. I think they're leading to a singles match with those two. And on paper, when I look at it, it makes sense for them to make Darby Allin Sting's rallying point.
Yeah,
so I don't know if they're going to win, but they're going to be standing tall at the end.
They're not going to lose their heat, and they're going to get the heat on Allin. I agree with that.
I think they're going to win, and they're going to hurt Darby because, I mean, how often you see a disqualification in AEW?
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. So I'm going to totally – I know that I say her name wrong every time I say it differently. Soraya?
I think it's Soraya.
Who did you have on that match?
I'm going to go with Lethal and Jarrett as well.
Gotcha.
So Soraya versus Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. And what do you think about this one, Amy?
I don't see you beating Soraya off the bat. So I think that she picks up the win against Britt Baker. It may or may not be clean. I don't know, but I think she comes out with the pin.
Dave?
Soraya, and I believe that that Britt Baker, it would not surprise me to see Jamie Hayter cost Britt Baker this match.
Yeah. I'm going to follow the lead on that one. I agree with you guys.
There's no way she's losing her first match.
No. Up next, we have a world title eliminator tournament final steel cage match.
No, the world title eliminator is a tournament, and
yeah,
we don't know who's in it. So, I mean, Ethan Page is going to win it, but I don't know who all the other people are. Lance Archer. But it's clearly this is an Ethan Page vehicle.
But I do know we have a steel cage match between Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, former tag team partners, former friends, I guess. And now we're going to blow this breakup up in the cage. Is that what we're doing here, Dave?
Sounds like an old school blow off to me.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like to me that it's time for Jungle Boy to get his win.
Yeah, I think.
Look for something spectacular off the top of the cage.
I think they're going to try and elevate Jungle Boy here by putting on a great performance, getting a seat in a steel cage and surviving as the big baby face here. So
This may be the first steel cage match that makes sense in AEW. But they've led to it. This has been a long feud that's heading towards a blow off in a steel cage, and that's old school, baby.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Amy?
Well, I was just going to say, do you care about this match? Do you care about Jungle Boy versus Luchasaurus? Because I don't. That's how I really feel. I just feel like they have just, this whole thing has been so, Luchasaurus, I liked when he turned and he changed his whole outfit. He went to the whole black mask, the black pants. Like, I did like that. And then 2 weeks later, he's like, oh, I was just kidding, Jungle Boy. No, I really did mean it. You know, it's just like, I don't, and I do understand that Christian Cage is injured, which could have totally changed the whole, you know, dynamics of what they were planning on doing. I do get that. But I just, this is, I used to really like and want to cheer on Jungle Boy, but I just have not, I don't know. I don't know if it's just because he's fighting Luchasaurus, if it's just been kind of going on. I don't know. It's just, I don't really care who wins. I do want someone to win, so it's kind of be over. But what is Luchasaurus going to do when this is over? Like, what do you see him doing after this?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
good question.
Both on paper, this matchup doesn't excite me, but they're kind of like cream corn. I mean, I don't go out to eat to get cream corn.
But if they got it, I'll eat it.
But damn it, when I get it. Damn it, when I get it, I really enjoy it. You know,
right.
That's what I'm saying. Is every day, I can't remember a time that I watched one of their matches where I'm like, man, that was. I mean, they're always entertaining, but they're not on my to do list. Like, they couldn't sell me the pay per view, but I always enjoy them. They're just not on my. They're when we talk wrestling, they're probably the last two that I'm going to mention.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I can't explain why that is, because I always enjoy their work when they, I mean, I've seen Luchasaurus have some bangers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, Meltzer gave him 5 stars. Mm. Think about that. I believe that he has more 5-star matches than Kurt Angle.
Well, we'll see.
That makes total sense.
We'll see if he can get 4 jars and a gulp from you next week.
Oh, yeah. Do you all know that?
I'm not watching Saturday, you guys.
Oh, okay. I'm not either.
I'm refereeing Saturday night. I'm not going to watch it.
Oh, that's right. It is a Saturday night pay-per-view, isn't it? So, as you all know, our wonderful friend Allison Faye, she is in love with Jungle Boy's hair. You know, mm-hmm. She loves that. And I think that Brian Pillman Jr. has better hair than Jungle Boy. So we have that little rivalry going on. I think Brian Pillman's number one, and she thinks Jungle Boy's number one. So
you're partial to the Kentucky waterfall.
Yeah.
I'm definitely partial to the Kentucky waterfall. But so I'm very interested to see how that comes out and see if anything happens to Jungle Boy's hair.
Well, I am on Team Allison on that, because I would like to be welcome into Jungle Boy's jungle. So, but anyways, on to our next match.
Hey, hang on. Amy was crapping on it. Who'd you pick?
I picked Jungle Boy to
Jungle
win.
Boy, okay.
Sorry.
She's too busy dumping on it.
I wasn't crapping on it. I was just showing lack of enthusiasm for the match. It's like,
Yeah, you crapped all over it. That's cool, though.
No carry wins, no.
All right, we got a TBS championship match between Jade Cargill, the champion, versus Nyla Rose. Amy, what are you thinking about that one?
Again, I think Jade comes out as a winner. I don't think you steal her belt and have all this stuff going on. Unfortunately for Nyla Rose, she is a star, but she has not been treated like one. She got beat by Riho. You know, and so exactly. And again, that is the way it was written, to no fault of her own. But, you know, I just think that she has not been seen or treated like the beast that she should be treated like. And that's the reason why I think she is not winning this match.
I've liked the build up. I've liked the build up for it. I mean, there's some tremendous heel work. I mean, by all parties involved, you know, on Nyla's side, there's no way that she beats Jade Cargill. I mean, I'm picking Jade Cargill all day, every day.
Yep, I'm in the same boat there.
I love me some Jade. I just can't figure out how wins and losses matter, and she's never had a world title shot. She's undefeated.
Mm-hmm. Well,
maybe they'll have an eliminator women's match so she can.
Yeah.
Just have all the belts.
Well, we do have another world title match coming up here, and that is the Ring of Honor World Champion, which is a four-way, the old Fatal Four-Way type match. And that is the champion, Chris Jericho, versus Claudio Castagnoli, versus Brian Danielson, versus Sammy Guevara, our buddy Devin's favorite little wrestler there. So what do you think about this one, Dave?
I think that this has potential to steal the show. I don't see Jericho losing this right now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, in a four-way, unless they're going to build some dissension and put it on Sammy. But I think if Ring of Honor's looming, or maybe I'm torn because it could go to Sammy, it could go to Daniel Bryan. It should go to Claudio. Claudio should have never lost it. But I'm going to say that Chris Jericho, my official prediction is that Chris Jericho retains.
Amy, what you got?
I think Brian Danielson.
Come on, JR. Get your shit together over there.
Oh, my gosh. I think Brian Danielson wins. I think that he is perfect for the ROH TV, you know, whatever they end up doing. I think Chris Jericho is too important to AEW to let him go off onto another show. If they do what they say they're going to try to do with ROH, kind of make it its own entity again, I think Brian Danielson is perfect for that. He doesn't, I don't want to say he doesn't care. He will do the greatest job, whatever he is asked to do. So, and I think he would be a perfect fit as the ROH champion.
I think he was the first one.
Well, let's say, you know, they, besides Sammy, they've all been, I mean,
ROH
champions. And so
I'm really kind of upset right now because you just stole my entire answer. But that's what I'm going to go with as well, Brian.
You're welcome.
They're all good picks. I mean, there's so many ways that this match can go.
Yeah.
You, on paper, you can't. It's hard to put it together. But I think I am predicting that match is going to steal the show.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next up, we have the AEW World Tag Team Championship of the World, the Acclaimed and all their scissors, versus Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland. To me, there's no way they're taking the belts off the Acclaimed right now with how hot they are. No,
everyone loves the Acclaimed, except for Allison.
Except for Allison.
Except for Allison Faye.
So I think we're in agreement on that one, right?
Scissor.
Yes.
Yep, we've all been scissored. Properly scissored.
In 2022, I own a Scissor Me Daddy Ass t-shirt.
Well,
you do have a daddy ass, so there's that.
Have you worn it? Has anybody scissored you?
My grandson.
Actually, you have a granddaddy ass is what you have.
I was going to say, how old is your grandson?
10, 9, 8.
Did he know? He just liked the shirt? Had he even watched it?
Oh, he saw it. He saw it on TV. We watched wrestling together.
I love it. I will say this. I did struggle a little bit on this one because, as I will show you all, six-star FTR, I am completely dumbfounded and will be dumbfounded on why FTR is not even on the pay-per-view. I don't know much about promoting wrestling business, but when you have a group of people who very much like the Acclaimed come out to cheers, come out to people knowing their song, wanting to see them, I don't understand why you keep them in the back. Like, I don't understand that mindset. It makes me think that it is true that the Young Bucks are holding them back.
Well,
it's
rumored that there's going to be a trios championship match added to it. The Young Bucks versus the Death Triangle. Whoever the six man champions are,
you're killing Amy right now.
Whoever the six man champions are, the Young Buck, the Elite's going to be back. So
you know what I think is going to be really interesting. I'm sorry. Let me say this. I hope that Tony Khan and the Elite, I hope they don't overestimate the feelings that people have about this whole CM Punk mess. If they think that people are going to be super excited that the Elite's coming back, there are going to be some. There's going to be a ton of people who are not going to be happy to see them back because of that CM Punk situation.
A lot of people don't see them as sympathetic characters in that.
No. Yeah. So if they want to come out there and think, I just would not be surprised if they got a chorus of boos. And they will hear boos from my house in Mayfield. But I just wonder if they have really thought about if they put them on that pay-per-view, they're going to get shredded. People are going to boo them. Have they really thought this through of what they're wanting if they add that trios match? And I would think they would probably win, right? Don't you think they'd win their titles back?
I would hope they wouldn't be smart enough to do that. They'd be smart enough not to do that, but the trios and the TNT championship, Wardlow versus Will Hobbs versus Samoa Joe, and the FTW championship, Hook versus Lee Moriarty, those are rumored to be added on. They haven't been yet. I think that this card that we're going over is long enough.
That's what I'm saying. That's like 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 matches, and they might add more.
If the Acclaimed were defending against FTR, then I would make it a point to order this pay-per-view. That would have sold me the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
If FTR would have been on it all,
if they'd been a three-way dance for the tag team titles, that'd been too much.
Right.
I will say, in all fairness to AEW, this is a solid card.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
except for that damn Jungle Boy match, right? Am I right, Amy?
Popcorn. Gotta go pee.
Well, our next match here is the AEW Interim World Women's World Championship. The champion is Toni Storm, and the challenger is Jamie Hayter. So, Dave, what are you thinking about this one?
I think Jamie Hayter is going to do it, and I think this match is going on early. I wouldn't be surprised if it's not the opening contest. And I think that not only is Jamie Hayter going to win the championship, I think that championship belt is going to be what causes Britt Baker to lose to Saraya. I think it's going to be a belt shot from her newly won championship, putting Britt Baker in the position to go after Jamie Hayter for the title, even though if she lost to Saraya and it's her house. That was cringe. but I think Jamie Hayter's going to win it. I think Jamie Hayter's time is to win it. And I think when Thunder Rosa gets back, she will probably be disposed of by Jamie Hayter. Okay. I don't know when it happened, but it was like a switch flipped, and Jamie Hayter became very, very, very popular.
Okay. Amy, what's your thoughts on it?
I have a lot of thoughts on this one. I don't want to say, okay. I don't care about this match because, again, why do we have an interim champion? Why don't we just vacate the title? Like, this is the weirdest thing ever.
I hate that, too. I hate it.
I mean, and I hate that because, I mean, I know it's like a built-in story, but it's a stupid story. You know, like, if Thunder Rosa could not do it or she had other obligations or they're fighting or whatever is the problem or injured, she vacates. That's what you do. You vacate the title,
he wanted to be different. I think he's trying to be different and didn't count on that his champions are all getting hurt, and then it becomes like, oh, my God, now we're doing it again.
Exactly.
UFC, I mean, they did. UFC does it. So, I don't agree, but it's make your champion lose it in the ring.
Yes. Or just, I know, and again, I know they're getting injured, but it's just such a, I mean, they did that between, you know, when Cody got injured or he had COVID or whatever, and they did like an interim TNT title holder for, and it ended up being like Sammy Guevara for 2 weeks. It just is so, it's just, it doesn't make any sense, because then technically you have these women fighting for a belt that's not really, they can't really win. You know what I'm saying? But on that thought, I like what you're saying, but I think Toni Storm is going to win. I think Britt Baker is going to cost Jamie Hayter the match somehow, and then Jamie will retaliate and cause problems in Britt's match. So that's what I kind of think could see happening. But I think the whole interim thing is dumb.
I 100% agree, but
yes.
But I know that he's just trying to be different.
Is she injured? Is Thunder Rosa injured, yes, or they got some? Okay.
I'm going to go with Amy on this one and pick Toni Storm. Mm-hmm. Then we have our final match, which is the champion, the AEW World Heavyweight Champion of the World, Jon Moxley versus MJF. So how do we think this one's going to shake out? Amy, go ahead and start with you.
There's only one way this can go, and that's the devil wins. Hmm.
Yep, I'm going to, I think they're going to put it on MJF finally. I do too.
I think MJF's going to win it, and I don't think it's going to be clean. Part of me thinks that the whole thing with the firm is a setup, and it was just all an act, and they're going to do it. But I would not be shocked if William Regal doesn't turn on Jon Moxley and give this to MJF. And I wouldn't be surprised if MJF's new faction is the Blackpool Fight Club.
And I think would be awesome.
MJF won't use the ring, but Mr. Regal might. Mm-hmm. Mr. Regal punches him with the ring. MJF gets the roll up. I think MJF's hand gets raised at the end of the night.
What I think should happen is Kevin Sullivan comes out and helps the devil win, so he can be like the devil's dad. See, that's how that.
Nobody watching AEW get that reference.
I like that though, Pondwater. I mean, I like that. I mean, I definitely feel like William Regal is involved somehow for the fact that they did have kind of like those back-to-back, promos that they did. Danielson winning the ROH champion, so he can kind of be removed from the Blackpool Combat Club. Jon Moxley gets beat. I mean, that leaves Claudio and Wheeler Yuta. And so
you're already kind of had some infighting there.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I agree. I do think Regal needs to be a heel. Is out there somewhere.
Can you imagine the heel work with both of them?
No, and I do. A better heel. I do think, like you're saying, that probably the stuff with the firm, or maybe it wasn't, but he's still going to be a heel. Like, he doesn't need to be turned babyface at all.
Yep, I agree with that. Well, I think we have firmly wrapped up there our opinions on what's going to happen this weekend at Full Gear.
And I don't say I'm not watching the pay-per-view because I don't want to watch it.
You're working.
I don't like watching things after the fact if I already knew the results.
Yeah, me too.
And if I don't know the results, I might watch it. Right. And I may watch it anyway for the MJF stuff. But mm-hmm. I'm going to be refereeing Saturday night. So that's why, if I can't watch it live, I don't want to watch it.
Right.
We will both be in stripes this Saturday coming up. So.
Okay, I'll take one for the team and I'll watch it. I probably will, because I'll probably get to the point where I'm not going to get it. And then it's going to be Saturday and I'm going to be like, I got to know what happened. I've got to know what happened. So well, I probably will get it.
Saturday is all right for fighting, someone, a great man once said. So hope you guys all check it out. And it is now time for my favorite part of the show, which is the Pondwater Dave show and tell hour of the show. And it won't always be Dave doing the show and tell. Me and Amy will actually, or Amy and I should say, my English teacher listens to this, she's going to kick me. But we will be showing some stuff of ours as well. But I think Dave has something for us this week. What do you got, Palmwater?
You showing something too, Amy?
I do have an autograph.
Oh.
But you go ahead. You show yours first. You show yours, and then I'll show mine.
What I have here is a replica of the Southwest Heavyweight Championship. It's just one plate. Three, if you count these, but they're not really. I mean, it's just on cow leather.
Lace. I was gonna say, is that like a cow?
And the tag belts were on cow leather too. Tully Blanchard held them with Gino Hernandez, and Tully Blanchard was the Southwest champion. And this was a promotion that was out of San Antonio, Texas, owned by Joe Blanchard, who's Tully's daddy.
Mm-hmm.
And before WWF started on the USA Network, Southwest Championship Wrestling was a weekly show on the USA Network on Sunday mornings.
Mm-hmm.
And you had Bob Sweetan, Eric Embry, Gino Hernandez, Adrian Adonis, and Tully Blanchard was on there.
I can totally see Tully and Gino rocking those belts. Like, those are some, definitely could see them in their 70s guy suits.
Did they have a lot of guys like Jose Lothario or Mil Máscaras and those guys come through there as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Cowboy Scott Casey. Man, there's just so many people came through San Antonio. At one point, they were booking their talent through Dallas, and they quit using the Dallas booking office.
How come?
Started using Houston through Paul Bosch.
Yeah. This was kind of a rival to Paul Bosch's promotion over there, right? Kind of?
Yes.
Okay. I think it was
It wasn't really a rival. It was just that they had the San Antonio territory.
Right.
And then they started trying to run Houston and trying to run Dallas. And then they became more of an outlaw.
That's what I was thinking. They were a little bit of an outlaw, kind of like.
Because they were going out of their territory. But World Class could run down there and Houston could run there and it was all
right. Right. Okay.
And while we're at it, I'm going to go ahead and show Brainbuster's turnbuckle pad, autographed by Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard.
You should have warned me.
Tag teams. Tully, of course, signs it with his 2 Corinthians 5:17 Bible verse that's always part of his autograph.
Yep. You should have warned me that you're going to be showing that. The Tully and Arn are definitely, in my favorites. And so I did not know you had that. And so now I will think about that often. No.
I was going to show my program with Brother Love and the Brainbusters on the cover, autographed by both of them.
But, cool.
But I didn't want to get it off the wall.
Did you have them sign it, or did it come to you already signed?
I acquired it already signed. In my next opportunity to be around Bruce, I'm going to get Bruce to sign it too.
Oh, that'll be cool to have them all sign it. I've seen that. I've seen that picture or that magazine cover.
But with that show and tell, we're gonna talk about Tully Blanchard.
Yes, I was going to just bring that up. So because that's
you're the host.
You're okay. That's why. Dave was showing us that belt that Tully, of course, wore and the Brainbusters pad there, because we are going to talk about the great Tully Blanchard today. Born January 22nd, 1954. Dave said earlier, the son of a wrestling promoter, the American Wrestling Association star Joe Blanchard, and Tully was involved in, started wrestling at a very, very young age, right, Dave? Right out of college, pretty or even before that, I think.
Well, he was selling peanuts and hanging flyers at 10 years old.
Yeah, he sold programs and refreshments at the arena at the age of 10. He worked as a referee when he was a little bit older than that.
He was ring crew. He's done it all.
Mm-hmm. But took a little break there.
Let me give you a little Joe Blanchard. I'm going to do a sidebar. J.J. Dillon told me one night that he was wrestling, and he was wrestling for Joe Blanchard, and they were doing an angle, and they were at the Sam Houston Coliseum, Corpus Christi. And they fought through the crowd and out the doors, across the highway, onto the beach.
Uh-oh.
And as Joe Blanchard pinned J.J., a wave crashed on them. They actually made the pinfall in the ocean.
That's some Alabama doink stuff right there.
Made its way to Texas.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So he took a little break from the wrestling world and attended West Texas State University, playing football first as their quarterback and then went to defensive end. And he actually played alongside Tito Santana and Ted DiBiase, which is pretty cool.
He was their starting quarterback for 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Then he goes on to Southwestern Championship Wrestling. He was trained by his dad, Joe, and by the great Jose Lothario, who also trained Shawn Michaels, as we know. He debuted in 1975 in his father's promotion, Southwest Championship Wrestling. And that's where we start off here. What are you guys want to start off with your, just what Tully meant to you guys growing up watching him?
My first exposure to Tully was on Southwest Championship Wrestling when he was with Gino. It was just prior to Gino turning on him. And I thought he was a prick. I mean, he was a very good heel. Mm-hmm. I mean, to know him was to hate him. He left the area pretty quick. I mean, I lost track of him until he came up in Crockett because Southwest, it was pulled off USA Network. It was an area that was covered heavily in the wrestling magazines.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember that he was a really good heel. He did his job well because I hated him initially.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people say that he kind of lived that prick gimmick back then.
You know, he would say that, I bet.
Yeah.
Well, he said that they had them against the world mentality.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were getting messed with by the Dallas office and the Houston office. And then they got, when they weren't paying, they couldn't pay their bills and they lost their time slot to Vince.
Mm-hmm. Amy, what was your first time you remember seeing Tully when you was growing up?
Well, I definitely remember him as a Four Horseman. In Brainbusters, obviously coming with Arn. And then, of course, after that, he kind of disappears for a little bit. And then, he showed up back in AEW with FTR, with the Pinnacle, with, MJF.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting because I had a friend of mine who I went to high school with emailed me or messaged me one night. Because he was my friend, his name is Kelly, was involved in ministering to prisoners. And he was messaging me saying, hey, you're never going to believe who I met last night and doing my prison ministry. And I was like, who? And he's like, Tully Blanchard. And I was like, what? And he goes, I knew you would know who he was. So I was like, I had no idea. He goes, yeah, he comes. He has his black robe he wears and he gives a testimony. And I was like, at that moment, I was just like, that's different. So that's when I kind of started to look up more information about Tully. And that is something that he has been doing for quite a long time, mm-hmm. is being part of ministering to incarcerated people. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's that total contrast of thinking about the guy who smacked Baby Doll on national television, right, to this and living that lifestyle, like you were saying, Justin, that was probably living that lifestyle to hit rock bottom, to turn his life over to God, and this is what he's doing now. And you mentioned Dave, and I have an autograph I have a couple autographs from Tully. He does. He always includes that Corinthian verse. And I had it pulled up because I think it's exact.
To simplify it, what's old is now new.
Right. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come, the old has gone, the new is here. Because he gave his life over to Christ, that old persona, that old person is gone. This new person's here, and he's, you know, making amends, trying to do better, trying to help those who who've lost their way. One thing that I found out that was interesting, did you all know that Tully had a brother?
I wasn't aware of it.
He had a brother. His brother's name was Taylor. And in 1978, when Taylor was 16, he was killed in a car accident on his way to baseball practice.
Oh, that's hard.
So Tully would have been 23, 24, maybe, because he's a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
And Tully says that that obviously devastated his family. But that is when his father, Joe, and his mother, that's whenever they turned their lives over. That's when they found Christ, I guess you could say. Because right. He talked about how, you know, he did not come from a religious home. And that, you know, he hadn't been to church since he was 5 years old. But his dad would talk to him about it, because after his brother Taylor died, his mom and his dad, you know, turned to the Lord to help them through their grief. And that his dad would talk to him at times about it, because obviously he knew he was living that lifestyle that maybe would take him down the wrong path. But I thought it was interesting because Tully has his firstborn is named Taylor. So he named mm-hmm. his child after his brother. So no, I'd never heard that, but Tully does talk about that in with the prison ministry. That is a story that he talks about, is, you know, his brother passing and what that did to his family, and how his parents ended up going back to church and kind of encouraging him, and kind of how all that was leading. Mm-hmm. So I think that is quite the juxtaposition of people, from the four horsemen smacking women around and limousine riding, whatever that thing, whatever that saying is.
Getting ahead of it, but do you remember when he smacked Magnum? He got Magnum, and Magnum was already crippled, and he talked to him and called him a cripple, and then when he hit him and knocked him down, and Dusty Rhodes came out on the scene with a baseball bat and just started waylaying everybody, including Jim Crockett.
Yes, now that you say it.
I mean, it was so believable. So believable.
I guess at that point you had seen them smack baby dolls, so nothing surprised you. But yeah, it was despicable. Definitely despicable.
Tully Blanchard, when he got to Crockett, mm-hmm. you know, my first, and that's when I really started noticing Tully Blanchard through the feud with Magnum TA.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out of that feud, I mean, I loved Magnum TA, but Tully was becoming, I liked him. You know, he's that swarmy heel. I would notice things on the Superstation that if Tully had a good week, mm-hmm. that he'd get out there with the enhancement talent. Oh, Piss Break Jones.
Oh.
Shake it more than twice you're playing with it, Justin.
You can tell me. I'll listen.
I'm horrible. I'm horrible.
No.
I told him I was going to do that. Whenever the screen goes off, I'm going to get me a little tinkle sound effect to put over the video. We call it Piss Break Jones. If you'd like to sponsor Piss Break Jones segment, drop us a line at TomWaterDaveShow@yahoo.com. Anyway,
we'll probably get somebody. I bet somebody would want to sponsor that.
Proud sponsor of Piss Break Jones. That's our thing. Anyway, back to what I was saying. It was Tully would come out, and if he had a good week. If he had a good week, it would he would be clean with the enhancement talent. He'd shake their hand and he'd have fun and he'd smile and he'd strut a little bit and he'd still win.
Mm-hmm.
But on the weeks that it didn't go his way, he'd get in there and he'd use that tan. I mean, he'd beat the piss out of them. I mean, it was I loved how he did that on the his persona on the Superstation. I loved how he's like picking a fight with Oli. You know, if you'd have been here instead of watching that snot-nosed kid, I mean, I just, Tully was my favorite wrestler not named Ric Flair.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a different, I used to notice that he'd wear a Nugget watch. Back then, we all had Nugget watches. Flair wore a Rolex. Tully wore a Nugget. Little things like that. But I loved Tully Blanchard. And still do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wanted to ask a question now. On his, of course, he goes to NWA, as you said, and joins the Four Horsemen, wins the tag team titles, wins the U.S. title, wins the TV title, I believe.
National championship.
Yeah, very successful over there. And then him and our buddy Arn decide they're not making enough money, and they decide to jump over to WWE and form the Brainbusters, and managed by the great Bobby Heenan. What was your feelings both, for you guys when him and Arn made the move up north?
You'll find that when my favorites go to WWE, WWF, I didn't like it. But what I noticed when they got there, that they got to keep their names. They couldn't be the Horsemen anymore. I got that. But I got on board with the Brainbusters with Bobby Heenan. I liked it. I didn't like it initially that they went, because I didn't want to see them do something stupid. I mean, I didn't know what kind of gimmick they were going to get put on them.
Yeah.
But
you didn't want them to be the Red Roosters.
Right, but they were treated with – I thought they were treated with respect. They were given Bobby Heenan, and they became the tag champions.
Yeah, I agree. I loved it because I
think they're one of the greatest tag teams of all time.
Agreed.
Yes, for sure. What do you think, Amy, when they went up there?
Well, you know, I guess because I am a little bit younger than Pondwater, I probably still believed wrestling was real. So I was probably super excited. I wasn't thinking about, oh, I hope they're not saddled with like a goofy gimmick or whatever. That wasn't how I saw it. I was, when I saw them with the Bobby Heenan, again, that just, you know, solidified they're dirty. They're a bad tag team. They're bad as in heel tag team. Mm-hmm. That they were exactly where they needed to be. And just like you said, I was a big fan of Demolition. And so seeing them, you know, wrestle, that to me was just perfect. Like that made me very happy to watch the 2 out of 3s and, you know, the things that they would do. So mm-hmm. I love watching Demolition. I love watching them. So when they're all together, that just, again, made me think that's exactly what they should be doing.
Well, as you said, they did defeat Demolition for the WWF at the time Tag Team Championship on July 18th, 1989 on Saturday night's main event. Which aired on July 29th, if you want to get on the Peacock and check that out. It ended Demolition's historic first reign. They then lost the titles back to Demolition on Superstars, which aired on November 4th. They then kind of had a falling out with Vince and went back up to WCW, I think, at the time, maybe still in the BA. But on the way back up there, Blanchard failed a drug test, testing positive for the cocaine.
I think they screwed him. I think that information getting out screwed him. I don't think it was common practice for that information to get out, and it torpedoed him with WCW.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they screwed Tully on the way out. And I mean, he popped, and I'm not saying that he didn't do it. I mean, he says he did it.
Mm-hmm.
I just think the way it was handled screwed him going back to NWA, WCW. And they pulled him, and Bobby Heenan actually took his spot on the Survivor Series card.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I always loved it when Bobby worked, because, God, he was like a Ray Stevens bumper, and I always loved it when he got it.
Did you ever see Bobby Heenan in the AWA? Have you ever gone back and watched those matches?
I have not. I've seen clips. I have seen clips, but I don't think I've ever went back and watched an entire match.
when we started getting AWA, I saw Bobby Heenan tag teaming with Nick Bockwinkle on several occasions.
Right.
And I mean, he was kind of like the Buddy Roberts of that act. He was the workhorse.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible bumper.
Yeah.
You know, Justin, I say this. I don't think this affects you, but it might be Justin. What I love about wrestling is, since I was a fan as a child, I go back. I had no idea why Bobby Heenan was the tag team partner now for the in the Survivor Series, just that Tully wasn't there. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I didn't know any of this behind the scenes, and he got popped for coke. You know, I mean, again, when you are that innocence, that the shade has not been, you know, the blinds are still on kind of thing. I had no idea. I loved it. I loved watching that, you know. I like that traditional Survivor Series matches where they're, you know, the 4-on-4 or whatever. Like, I like those.
Teams of five strive to survive, pal.
Exactly. I love that. And so what I've loved being able to do as a more mature fan is go back and watch all these things over, knowing the backstories from, you know, thanks from the, you know, Something to Wrestle With, and Tony, you know, What Happened When, and, you know, all these podcasts that we listen to or that are out there to listen to that can give you this information now. And then you go back and you're just like, he just found, you know, that's not even his, you know, wrestling gear. That's so-and-so. You know, I mean, these stories that you hear, like, he has on so-and-so's wrestling boots because he didn't have none.
It's like watching a prequel.
Yeah.
Watching a prequel. I remember going to see the musical Wicked, which is a prequel to The Wizard of Oz. And you're like, oh, that's why that's that way. Oh, that's why that's that way. And it's kind of like Star Wars Rogue One, making Chapter 4 make more sense. I mean, it's so, yeah, I mean, in wrestling, when you had that opportunity, I like that with anything, that you can go back to a prequel and it paints, oh, that's why that was that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm for it.
Yeah.
So in our research, I didn't realize that Tully had gone down to Puerto Rico and feuded with Carlos Colon. I'd like to see some of that.
Mm-hmm. When did he do that?
In
85?
Yeah.
Mid-80s. You know what else happened in 85?
I was born.
Well, besides that. Isn't that a holiday? I'm pretty sure that's a national holiday. Tully wrestled in a six-man match December 7th, 1985, against the one and only Billy Jack Haynes.
Hey, there it is.
We didn't even have to do 6 degrees of separation. That was pretty much.
We got right to it on that one.
It was Arn Oley and Tully versus Billy Jack, Sam Houston, and Magnum T.A. December 7th, 1985.
Yeah.
So.
Well.
Billy Jack's everywhere. I'm telling you.
Yes.
Yep.
We see, or I always just thought it was weird that that Tully never got another shot. I mean, especially at WCW, considering all the history that they had together, the fact that he never did go back there just seemed very odd to me. And I don't know if maybe they did put feelers out later, you know, later on to him, and he was just pissed, you know, kind of mad at him that they, what they did in the first place. I don't know if that was a part of it, or.
I think the money was so insulting to him that he just didn't, that I think it just, that's what made him walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He did some stuff in the 90s. He did wrestle for WCW. He came in and worked against Terry Funk to a double disqualification.
And did he wrestle on ECW too, or am I making that up?
No, he showed up in 95 in ECW.
That's what I thought. Okay.
And then on the indies in 1998, he won the NWA World Tag Team titles again with Barry Windham.
Mm-hmm.
And a different version of the NWA. I mean, mm-hmm. It wasn't what it, I mean, because that by then it was separated from Crockett.
Right. Do you think that, you know, when we off the air, I guess, we've talked about Kerry Von Erich and how, you know, he won the belt for like 2 weeks, you know, from Ric Flair, and then lost it again in Japan, that there was some talk that maybe Kerry wasn't reliable, you know, for to be the NWA champion? No? I saw that look, Dave.
My point was,
do you think because of Tully's drug habit and drinking, is it possible that the WCW, yes, they gave them, or they, you know, didn't want to give him a whole lot of money. Do you think they thought of him as, you know, not reliable and you didn't want to, you know, deal with something like that, especially, you know, with just the different generations, different people, Jim Herd, you know, different people that different were in structure. Charge. Yeah.
I think Jim Crockett would have rolled the dice on him again.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think Turner, I don't think that Turner could do it. I don't think with Jim Herd in charge with that.
Or Bill Watts. Or Bill
right.
Watts. I think Bill Watts would have rolled dice on him. He would, but I think he would have insulted him with his money though.
Right.
And I think that was part of it. But I think that the culture at Turner wouldn't allow for it the way that if Jim Crockett, if he could have gone back to Jim Crockett Promotions, failing a drug test wouldn't have been a big deal.
Right.
I believe that. And then finally, oh, back to what you were saying about Kerry being unreliable. I don't know that I believe that, and I'm going to tell you why. He was champion for 18 days. He defended the title 18 times. Mm-hmm. Where did he miss a shot? I mean, if he missed a shot somewhere in there, where was it? Because, I mean, do the math, and you see – I've seen the schedule. My thinking, my theory why Kerry was only champion for 18 days is he left Texas and went to Florida before he went to Japan. I can only imagine that he did not draw as a champion because the NWA champions were typically not babyface. So he's in there against Superstar Graham. He's in there against Mike Rotundo. He's in there against Ron Bass. Two out of three. Right. And I'm not sure that – I don't know if any of those were heels. Maybe Superstar Graham. But maybe Eddie Graham got on the phone and said, hey, you know, this is not going to work because – I just had my turn with the champion, and he don't draw.
Gotcha.
And maybe they panicked. Maybe they panicked and pivoted back to Flair because of that. Because back then the promoters voted on that, and you had Eddie Graham pushing for Dusty. You had Fritz pushing for his boys. You had Crockett pushing for Flair.
Sure.
They were doing him a favor anyway, letting Kerry take the title, getting David's run. That we all know that David was probably going to get it. So I don't think it was unreliable. I think it was not good at the box office and they panicked and they went ahead and pivoted back to Flair quicker. Because I'd like to know how soon Flair returned to Florida after he got the title. I had never gone to do the research to see. But I bet you Flair drew better in Florida his next time through than Kerry did.
True.
I'm just guessing. Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. I mean,
I'm not saying that Kerry. I'm not saying that Kerry didn't have his problems.
Right.
18 defenses in 18 days is a hell of a schedule. I don't see where he might not have. I don't see where the unreliability had time to come in there. Plus, those boys were pushed extremely hard.
Right.
To keep their dates.
I guess I mean the because, like you said, it was Dave's turn in a sense. At the championship. So adding Kerry into that spot was a very quick decision. I mean, you know, because.
Right. I mean, they already had it set up because Flair thought he was going on vacation. He says I was going on vacation. Then I was told to get to Japan and get the belt back.
Exactly. So I wonder
speaking of that belt in 2005 in Tampa Bay, Florida at Wrestle Reunion in January of 2005, Jeff Jarrett defended the NWA World Heavyweight Championship against Tully Blanchard. Jeff Jarrett had Baby Doll in his corner. And the special referee was supposed to be Ricky Steamboat. But Ricky Steamboat got hired that Friday by WWE and had to leave the convention to go to work and was replaced by Kevin Von Erich as the referee.
Interesting.
It always used to work that way when somebody's getting ready to go work for someone else. WWE all of a sudden gets interested in them.
So, and I need you right now.
Yeah. So,
that match was good. It was a great match. Tully looked like $1 million. He was in shape. And I was watching it, and Les Thatcher was sitting next to me. And I'm going to tell this story because I'm going to tell why Jeff Jarrett and me are friends now. He said that Jeff Jarrett was not used to wrestling that style of match. Till he was leaning on him, till he was working him different, and had him heaving. I mean, had him, I say he blew him up. Les Thatcher said he blew him up. I don't mean that derogatory, but Tully's style of wrestling was different than what the style of wrestling in TNA was in 2005. So fast forward to a couple years ago when I had the opportunity to meet Jeff Jarrett. I'm sitting across the table from him.
I'm glad you're telling this story.
And unfortunately, I'm going to ask him, hey, Jeff, remember when you wrestled Tully Blanchard 2005, Les Thatcher said that he blew you up because he was wrestling a different style that you weren't used to. I'd gone to wrestling training, and I know that grappling was a lot harder than, I mean, the struggle. It wasn't meant to be insulting. I wanted him to educate me on what Tully was doing different to make it more grueling. Mm-hmm. Now, I can explain what I meant to y'all right now, but Drunk Dave said, hey, Jeff, I heard Les Thatcher said that Tully Blanchard blew you up in 2005. So Jeff didn't get mad, and I was half drunk. And anyway, Ric Flair's last match, Jeff sees me. I'm in the arena, close to the ring. They're working. Jeff comes down the ramp and he says, and it shakes my hand and he goes, hey, Dave, tonight I need you to, when you run out, I need you to run down the ramp and touch the ring. Run back up, high five Shivani, run back and touch the ring. I want you to do that like four times because when you slide in, I need you blown up. So I laughed and I said, that's cute that you think it would take four times.
Well, as we wrap up here talking about Tully, what do you guys think his legacy is in the wrestling world?
One half of one of the greatest tag team champions. Instead okay. of a tag team machine, mm-hmm. tag team specialist. Great individual, accomplishments, but it's always going to be Tully and Arn for me. When I think Tully, I don't think Tully without Arn anymore. And the Four Horsemen, of course. Mm-hmm. And he never said I quit in that I quit match.
What do you think, Amy?
On the same lines of Dave, I mean, again, Arn and Tully are definitely number one tag teams. I think that they have inspired so many other tag teams, especially FTR, which is another one of my super favorite tag teams. One thing I do want to say just real quickly about Tully, he won the Iron Mike Award from the Cauliflower Alley Club in 2017. That is given to wrestlers who, let me see if I wrote this down. Darn it, I didn't. It's given to wrestlers who have shined outside of the wrestling world. Like they're known outside of the wrestling world. And you have to think that came because of the evangelization yeah. that he was doing. So mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting. Tully is leaving a legacy, not only in wrestling, but he is also leaving that legacy in evangelization, which I think he's probably more proud of. I mean, I'm mm-hmm. guessing. And so, I think that, again, he's a wonderful redemption story. Someone who had it all, did it all, seen the top, seen the bottom, and very content to where he is now. And the fact that he wants to help others, like I said, those are the things that really, when I think of Tully Blanchard, those are the things that I think of about his legacy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think another thing that no one listed there, but his I Quit match. Sorry, I can't talk. His I Quit match with Magnum, probably goes down as one of the best I quit matches ever. So
he it's definitely the cage has match that sets the standard for cage matches.
Yeah. So he definitely had that on there too.
Real quick, if you watch this six-man tag, the audience, because this is right after Starrcade, or is it before? It's December 7th. When was Starrcade?
It was usually in November.
Okay, that's what I thought. I thought it was, that's what I thought. So this match happens right after, and the audience is yelling, "I quit, I quit." They're yelling that to Tully. That's who's in the match. I think that's funny. But like you said, I'm just saying.
Don't get Dave half hot over there.
I'm sorry. I was just saying, if you listen, if you watch this match, which is really interesting, that's what the crowd is hollering. So I thought that was fun.
All right. Well, I think we did a pretty good job there of kind of covering the great career of Tully Blanchard. Dave, what do you got for us on the way out of here today?
I want to shout out to our good friend, Efren. Efren, if you don't know Efren, you should go out of your way to meet Efren. He is an incredible, incredible human being, one of the most caring and generous people I've ever met in my life. He hosts a game show, and it's been on ad-free shows, and I think it's going to turn up on another platform. It's called The Game Event, and he works so hard for so long on that show. And it's not gone. It's just going to grow somewhere else.
It's going to move platforms. Yeah.
It changed platforms. And we want to wish him well. And to keep it into wrestling, we wish him well at all his future endeavors.
That's right.
But his, you know, just anything that he does, he puts so much effort into it. And he's just such a genuine person that I wanted to shout him out. And he was so helpful to us three when we were trying to come together with how we were going to do this show, what we're going to name the show, you know, what we needed to do, what we need to stay away from. And he can give you honest feedback and not be mean. I mean, he genuinely cares about people. And I wanted to shout him out because he's our friend and we're real proud of him. And we wish him the best.
That's right. It's not good. It's not the goodbye. It's just see you later. And like you said, the game event will be back, and I'm sure better than ever. Not to steal someone's tagline there, but going to miss Efren. I'll run ad-free shows, but I'm looking forward to what he's going to be doing here in the future. So for sure, check out wherever that pops up. And we'll go ahead, wrap this up, guys. Our Twitter, you can find me at JD2040. You can find Amy at?
AmyRD_24.
And Pondwater?
Ref Super Dave PWD on Twitter.
And then our show on Twitter is, I think it's just the Pondwater Dave Show, right?
There. PWD. PWD Pod, I believe.
PWD Pod.
Okay. We ought to know that.
We should. Yeah, it might be helpful.
And I think we need to thank everyone. We had a great first episode. We really do appreciate all those people out there that are listening. And if you like it, which we know you do, please share it with your friends and family. You know, this is a really fun time. We talk old wrestling. We talk new wrestling. You know, there's something, a little bit of something for everybody. So I really do encourage you to leave those 5-star reviews.
Please.
Share with your family and friends. You know, the more people that hear us, you know, we'll get questions and, you know, the different topics. You know, we're really excited about getting this out there. So we just ask that, you know, you hit that subscribe button, you pass it along to others. We had a great first episode. I was blown away. Like I couldn't believe how many people said that they listened and that they enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed doing it. So I think we did something right.
Yep.
And this will be the last show before Thanksgiving. So I hope everyone has a safe and happy Thanksgiving. We're thankful for you listening. We are. And just forget. And to Paul Bromwell, forget about keto stuffing. Get off that one day. And just eat and just go crazy.
Go crazy, fans, as Gorilla Monsoon would say. And we will see you guys next week here on the Pond Water Dave Show. And